continued.
Then there's the forensics. No spatter on you, and you can't deliver blows like that without spatter. No spatter on your clothes, and witnesses verify the suit and tie you wore when you left the office. When did you have time, in an approximate 20-minute window, to change your clothes, change back again, and where were the blood-spattered ones, or whatever you used to cover your suit?
You sound like my lawyer.
He's a smart guy. Had no history of violence, no prior bad acts, and no matter how they came at you, you stuck to the story. They couldn't shake you off it.
Because it was the truth.
Added to it, the victim's own behavior weighed on your side. She was the one lying, the one cheating, the one planning on a generous settlement while she carried on a secret affair. The media made that case, too.
It's easy to smear a dead woman, and it's not what I wanted.
But it helped. So did the phone calls logged between her and Justin Susskind after you confronted her that afternoon. Shine the light on him a while.
He couldn't face coffee, he realized, and opened the refrigerator for water. I wanted it to be him.
Problems there. One, motive. Unless you subscribe to the theory she decided to break it off or step back after her confrontation with you, the motive problem deepens because she was good at keeping him a secret. Friends, co-workers, neighbors, nobody knew about him. Some suspected there was someone, but she never talked about it. Too much at stake. She didn't keep a diary, and the emails between them were careful. They both had a lot at stake. They met almost exclusively in hotels or out-of-town restaurants, B&Bs. Nothing the cops dug up pointed to any tension between them.
No. You wish that didn't continue to sting, even if the sting had gone dull. I think she cared about him a great deal.
Maybe she did. Or maybe she just liked the adventure. You're probably never going to know for sure, but the biggest problem with Susskind as killer is he's alibied by his wife. His betrayed wife. She comes across as mortified, even devastated by this affair, but she tells the police he was home that night. They had dinner together, alone, as both kids were at a school function. Then the kids get home about 8:15 and confirm Mom and Dad are hanging out at home.
She opened her briefcase, took out a file.
As you know, the Susskinds recently separated. I figured she might change her tune now that the marriage is going under. I talked to her yesterday. She's bitter, she's tired, she's done with the husband and the marriage, but she doesn't change her story.
Where does that leave us?
Well, if you cheat with one, maybe you cheat with others. Maybe another lover isn't happy about her and Susskind, or maybe another wife confronts her. I haven't found anybody yet, but that doesn't mean I won't. Mind?
Sherilyn asked and gestured to the coffee maker. No, sure.
I'd make it myself, but that machine looks like I'd need a training manual.
No problem.
Thanks. So you'll see, and I believe your previous investigator reported, she didn't always use a credit card for rooms. Sometimes she used cash, and that's hard to track. At this point, we have witnesses who identify Justin Susskind as her companion in several locations. Now we look for some that identify someone else.
He brought the fresh coffee back, sat again to skim through the files while Sherilyn talked.
She let a killer into the house, turned her back on him. She knew who killed her, so we look at who she knew. BPD was thorough, but they liked you for it, and the lead investigator was dug in hard on that.
Wolf.
He's a bulldog. You fit the bill for him. I can see where he's coming from, and you're a criminal defense attorney. That's the enemy. He busts his ass to take bad guys off the street. You line your pockets getting them back out.
Black and white.
I was a cop for 5 years before I went private.
Cupping the coffee in both hands, she leaned back to enjoy it.
I see plenty of gray, but it's a pisser when some hotshot suit gets an asshole a pass on some technicality, or because he's got good style with some fancy tap dance. Wolf looks at you, he sees rich, privileged, spoiled, conniving, and guilty. He built a damn good circumstantial case, but he couldn't shoot it home. Now, here you're on Whiskey Beach, and before you know it, there's another murder on your doorstep.
Now you're not sounding like my lawyer. You sound like a cop.
I have many voices,
she said easily. She took out another file, set it on the counter.
Kirby Duncan. He was basically a one-man operation, kept it low-key and low-tech. He wasn't bargain basement, but you'd find him on the sale rack. Cops liked him. He'd been one of them, and he played things pretty straight. Wolf knew him, was friendly with him, and he's pissed off he can't pin this on you. Then boomerang off it to circle your wife's death back on you.
I got that. Loud and clear. Eli agreed.
But in this case, none of it fits. Duncan wasn't an idiot, and he wouldn't have met the guy he was shadowing alone in a deserted area. Unless he got a wild hair to go to the lighthouse at night in the middle of a storm, he went to meet someone, and most likely someone he knew. And someone killed him. You're alibied, and there's absolutely nothing to indicate you and Duncan ever met or spoke. Nothing to indicate you hauled your butt from Boston, where it's confirmed you were when Abra Walsh was assaulted here in this house. Then arranged to meet Duncan, killed him, then hauled back to Boston to toss his office, his apartment, then hauled back here again. Nobody's buying that.
Wolf. Sherilyn shook her head.
I'm not sure even Wolf can swallow it, as hard as he might try. Now, if he can tie Walsh to it somehow so you had help, or find you contacted an accessory in Boston to do that end, that would go down.
Someone planted the murder weapon in Abra's house.
What?
She straightened up, her eyes as sharp and annoyed as her tone.
Why the hell didn't I know about this?
I'm sorry, I just found out myself Monday. Mouth grim. She took a notebook and pen out of her briefcase.
Give me the rundown.
He told her what he knew, watched her write her notes in what he thought of as cop shorthand.
Slabby frame-up,
she concluded.
Whoever did this is impulsive, disorganized, and maybe a little stupid.
He murdered a seasoned investigator, and so far he's gotten away with it.
Even stupid can be lucky. I'd like to see this cottage before I go back to Boston.
I'll ask Abra.
And this trench in your basement? I'll take a shot at the local boys, see how much they'll share with me.
She tapped her pen on the page as she studied Eli.
In our email and phone conversations, you've indicated you think this may all be connected.
It's a lot of damn coincidence otherwise.
Maybe. There's another one I dug up I find interesting.
She took out yet another file.
About 5 months ago, Justin Susskind purchased a property known as Sandcastle on the north point of Whiskey Beach.
He bought property here?
That's right. It's deeded in the name of Legacy Corp, a shell company he set up. His wife isn't listed on the deed or the mortgage. If and when they proceed with a divorce, it should come out. It's very possible at this point she's not aware of it.
Why the hell would he buy a house here?
Well, it's a nice beach, and it's still a buyer's market, real estate-wise.
Her smirk reappeared.
But the cynic in me says he has other motives. We could speculate he hopes to catch you in a mistake and avenge his dead lover, but you weren't living here 5 months ago and had no plans to.
Bluff House was here. My grandmother.
None of this connects him in any way, I can see, with your wife's death, and that's why you hired me. But I love a puzzle, or I wouldn't be in this business. Ad nosy, He buys property here, reasonably close to your landmark family home, a place my information indicates you rarely visited after your marriage.
Lindsay didn't like it here. She and my grandmother didn't get along.
I'd imagine she might bring up the house and all that goes with it in pillow talk. So, a few months after she dies, her lover buys the property, and you have a trench in the basement, a grandmother in the hospital, a PI shadowing you, then killed. And now the murder weapon planted in the home of the woman you're involved with. What's at the core of that, Eli? Not you. You weren't here when he took the first step. What's at the core?
Esmeralda's dowry. Something that probably doesn't exist, and if it does, sure as hell isn't buried in the basement. He left my grandmother to die.
Maybe. Can't prove it yet, but maybe. I wouldn't have given you all this information if my gauge didn't tell me you're not the type to fly off and do the stupid. Don't screw up my record on character judgment.
He shoved up because he did feel like flying off and doing the stupid. He could have killed her. She lay there, God knows how long. A defenseless old woman, and he left her to die. He could have killed Lindsay. He whirled back. His wife could be lying, covering for him out of loyalty or fear. He's capable of killing. The odds are Duncan's on him, too. Who else? Who else would care what I was doing? I thought it was Lindsay's family, but this makes more sense.
I did some digging there. Nosy,
she repeated.
The Piedmonts had an excellent firm, and two of their top investigators on this in Boston. They let them go about 3 weeks ago.
They let it go?
My information is the investigators reported there was nothing left to find. I'm not saying they won't hire another firm, but I can say they didn't hire Kirby Duncan.
If Susskind did, he'd know when I left the house, where I was, how much time he'd have to dig. He was in the house the night I was in Boston because Duncan told him I was in Boston. Then Abra came in. If she hadn't defended herself, he might have. Sherilyn sat as he paced to the terrace doors and back. You said Duncan was a straight shooter.
That's his rep, yeah.
Vinny, Deputy Hansen, went to see him the night of the break-in here to question him. He told Duncan about the break-in, about Abra. A straight shooter wouldn't like being used so a client could break the law, put hands on a woman. So, Susskind killed him rather than risk exposure.
Could make a tidy box, when and if it can be proved. Right now,
she tapped the files again.
All we can prove is he bought property. And his wife didn't strike me as loyal or afraid. Not when I talked to her. Humiliated and bitter. I don't know why she'd lie for him.
He's still the father of her children.
True enough. I'll keep on it. Meanwhile, I'm going to take a look around here, see if I can find out what Susskind's been up to. Get a bead on him.
I want you to give the cops what you have on him. She winced.
Ooh, that hurts. Listen, the cops will want to talk to him, ask questions, get their own gauge. It could scare him off, and we end up blowing our best angle. Give me a little time. Say a week. Let me see what I can finesse.
A week, Eli agreed.
Why don't you show me the famous hole in your basement?
Downstairs, she took a couple of shots with a little digital camera.
A lot of determination here,
she commented.
I read up a little on this dowry, the ship and so on, but just to get a general overview. I'd like to have one of my people do some more in-depth research on it, if that's okay with you.
It's fine. I've been doing some of my own. If there was anything, we'd have found it a long time ago. He's wasting his time.
Probably. But it's a big house. Lots of hidey holes, I imagine.
Most of it was built years after the Calypso. Whiskey built it generation by generation, along with the distilleries, the warehouses, the offices.
You didn't go into the family business,
she said as they started out. It's my sister's thing. She's good at it. I'll be the Landon in Bluff House. There's been one here, he explained. Always, since it was no more than a stone cottage on this bluff.
Traditions.
Matter.
And that's why you went back to the house in the back bay for your grandmother's ring.
It wasn't marital property. Even in the prenup, that was clear. But at that point, I didn't trust Lindsay.
Why would you?
Sherilyn commented. The ring belonged to the Landons. My grandmother gave it to me to give to my wife as a symbol that she was part of the family. Lindsay didn't honor that, and I was pissed. He added, closing the basement door behind them. I wanted to take back something that was mine. The ring, the silver set that had been in the family for 200 years. The painting, that was stupid, he admitted. I didn't want her to have something I'd bought out of sentiment, out of trust, when she'd betrayed that. Stupid, because after everything, I can't even look at it.
That added more weight on your side. You went up, took the ring, just the ring. All that jewelry you'd bought your wife, you left it alone. You didn't take it, didn't throw it around the room, out the window. You exhibited no sign of violent behavior or disposition. You're not a violent man, Eli.
He thought of Susskind, of Lindsay, of his grandmother, of Abra. I could be. She gave him a maternal pat on the arm.
Don't go changing. I booked a night at the B&B. I can have a chat with the owner about Duncan, about anyone who she saw him with. Sometimes people remember things over a blueberry muffin. They don't when they're talking to cops. I want to see Abra's cottage and sneak around Susskind's place. Maybe chat up any neighbors, some of the shopkeepers. He had to buy food, maybe a six-pack now and then.
Yeah. Let me call Abra about the cottage. He glanced at the list on the kitchen board as he took out his phone.
Is that her schedule?
Today's.
Busy woman.
Sherilyn studied the schedule as Eli spoke with Abra. A woman with her hands and that many pies, she thought, knew a little about a lot of people, and that could be useful. She said you can get the key from her neighbor, the house to the right of the cottage, Maureen O'Malley.
Great. I'm leaving those files for you. I have copies.
She closed her briefcase, lifted it.
I'll keep you up to date.
Thanks. You've given me a lot to process. As he walked her to the door, it struck him. Six-pack. Beer. Bar!
Make mine a draft.
Abra, the second break-in. We were at the bar, where she works on Fridays. She saw this guy, unfamiliar, unfriendly. He ordered another drink, but he left before she served it, and as soon as I walked in.
Can she describe him?
It's dark in there. She worked with a police artist, but the sketch isn't much. But
if you showed her a picture of Susskind, worth a shot. And there's one in the file. It only proves he was in the bar, which, seeing as he has a house here, isn't much, but it's more.
He wanted more still, Eli realized. It ground in his gut. The idea that the man his wife had betrayed him with might have killed her, might have caused his grandmother's fall and left her for dead, might have assaulted Abra. He'd invaded Bluff House. Everyone in Whiskey Beach knew of the Landons, so buying a house here was a deliberate act. One taken for proximity to Bluff House. He was certain of it. He carried the files into the library, sat at the old desk with him and his legal pad for his own notes, and went to work. When Abra came in shortly after 5, he was still at it, and the dog who greeted her at the door stared at her with pleading eyes.
Eli.
Huh? Blinking, he looked around, frowned. You're back.
Yes, I'm back, and actually a little late.
She stepped up to the desk, scanned the piles of papers, the thick ream of notes, and picked up the two empty bottles.
A two Mountain Dew session.
I'll get those.
Got them. Did you have lunch? Did you take the dog out?
Oh. He slid a glance down to the sad-eyed Barbie.
I got caught up. Two things. One, I'm not going to let you neglect yourself again. Skipping meals, subsisting on nuclear yellow soft drinks and coffee. And two, you're not allowed to neglect a dog who depends on you.
You're right. No, I was busy. I'll take her out in a minute. In answer, Abra simply turned and walked out, the dog at her heels.
Shit.
He looked at his papers, his progress, raked his hands through his hair.
He hadn't asked for the dog, had he?
But he'd taken the dog, so that was that. Rising, he made his way to the kitchen, found it empty, with Abra's enormous bag on the counter. A glance out the window showed him she'd taken the dog out herself, and they were halfway down the beach steps.
No need to be pissy about it,
he muttered, and grabbed a jacket and Barbie's favored ball on the way out. By the time he reached them, woman and dog were walking briskly along the shoreline.
I got caught up, he repeated. Obviously.
Look, I got a lot of new information from the investigator. It's important.
So is the health and well-being of your dog, not to mention your own.
I just forgot she was there. She's so damn polite. Because it sounded like an accusation, he sent the dog a silent apology.
I'll make it up to her.
She likes to chase the ball. See? He unhooked the leash.
Go for it, Barbie!
And heaved the ball into the water. The dog flew after it on wings of joy.
See? She forgives me.
She's a dog. She'll forgive almost anything.
Abra stepped nimbly out of range when the very wet Barbie returned to drop the ball on the sand. Eli picked it up, threw it again.
Would you have remembered to feed her? Her water dish was empty.
Damn it. Okay, he sucked right at the moment. It won't happen again. I was
caught up, she finished. So you forgot to water and walk your dog, forgot to eat. I imagine you didn't write. Instead, you spent all your time and energy on murders and treasure.
And damned if he'd apologize for that part. I need answers, Abra. I thought you wanted them too.
I do.
She searched for calm as he thrilled the dog with another toss.
I do, Eli, but not at the expense of you. Not if it costs you what you've rebuilt in yourself.
That's not what this is. It's one afternoon, for Christ's sake. One where all kinds of doors opened up into areas I need to explore. Because rebuilding isn't enough if you don't know.
I understand. I do. And maybe I'm overreacting. Except about the dog, because there's just no excuse.
How crappy do you want me to feel? She considered it. Considered him. Considered Barbie.
Pretty crappy about the dog.
Mission accomplished. With a sigh, she slipped out of her shoes, rolled her pants to her knees to wade into the surf.
I care about you. So much. It's a problem for me, Eli, caring so much for you.
Why?
It's easier just to live my life. You've had experience there,
she added, pushing her hair out of her face when the wind carried it.
It's easier just to live your life than to take that step again, that risk again. And it's scary when you can't seem to stop yourself from taking the step. I can't seem to stop myself.
The turn of conversation left him baffled and a little uneasy. You matter to me more than I thought anyone would or could again. It is a little scary.
I'm not sure either of us would have felt this way if we'd met a few years ago. If we'd been the people we were then. You pulled yourself out of a pit, Eli.
I had help.
I don't think people take help unless they're ready for it, whether they know it or not. You were ready for it. It hurts my heart to remember how sad and tired and dark you were when you first came back to Whiskey Beach. It would break it to see you that way again.
That's not happening.
I want you to have your answers. I want them too. I just don't want them to be something that sends you back into that pit, or that puts you on the other side of it, that changes you back into someone I don't know. It's selfish, but I want who you are now.
Okay. Okay. He took a moment to line up his thoughts. This is who I am, and who I am forgets things.
gets caught up and is learning to like having someone remind him not to. I'm not that different from who I was before all this happened, but what happened focused me. I don't want to be a problem for you, but I'm not going anywhere. I'm where I want to be. That's one answer I'm sure of. She pushed at her hair again, angled her head.
Get rid of a tie.
What?
Get rid of a tie. One tie, your choice. And let me read one scene of the book. One, again, your choice. Symbolism, throwing out something from before, offering me something from now.
And that solves the problem? She wagged her hand back and forth.
We'll see. I guess I'll go figure out what's for dinner and make sure you eat.
She gave him a poke in the belly.
You're still on the skinny side.
Not a lot of meat on you either. To prove it, he plucked her up, made her laugh as her legs wrapped around his waist.
And then we'll have a really big dinner.
She pressed her lips to his, hers still curved as he spun her around, and as she drew back, saw just where he was headed.
Don't, Eli!
She went into the surf with him, rolled and tumbled. Gasping, she managed to gain her feet just as the next wave struck and sent her sprawling. Laughing like a maniac, Eli pulled her up again.
I wanted to see what it was like.
Wet and cold.
She shoved back her dripping hair as the excited dog swam around them. What did it say about her, she wondered, that his impulsive, silly act had wiped away her earlier annoyance and nerves?
Moron.
Mermaid. He pulled her against him again. That's what you look like, just as I thought.
This mermaid has legs currently freezing, and sand in very uncomfortable places.
It sounds like a long hot shower's on tap. Gripping her hand, he pulled her to shore. I'll help you out with that sand. He laughed again when the wind struck.
Christ, it's freezing! Come on, Barbie!
Caught up. That's what it said about her, she thought. She was just caught up. She managed to snag her shoes as they ran across the beach. 24. The instant she dashed inside the mudroom, Abra peeled off her dripping hoodie, towed off her soggy shoes.
Cold, cold, cold,
she chanted, teeth chattering as she dragged off her wet top, wiggled out of her clinging pants. The distraction of wet, naked, shivering Abra slowed Eli's progress. He was still struggling with his sodden jeans when she streaked away.
Hold on a minute!
He fought off the jeans, his boxers, left the whole mess in a pile and a spreading pool of seawater and wet clumps of sand to race after her. He heard her chanting still.
Cold, cold, cold!
He caught up just after the shower spray exploded, along with her garbled cry of relief.
Warm, warm, warm.
She let out a little shriek when he grabbed her from behind.
No, you're still cold!
Not for long. He spun her around, plastering her against him, and grabbed a hank of her hair, and covering her mouth with his, felt the heat rise. He wanted to touch everywhere, all that wet skin, those long lines, those subtle curves. He wanted to hear her throaty laugh, the catch of her sigh. When she shivered now, it was from arousal, anticipation, while the flood of hot water rained over them both. Her hands glided over him, a light scrape of nails, an erotic dig of fingers. She turned with him under the spray, around and around through the pulsing waterfall, with her mouth a wet, hot demand against his. He wanted her happy. Wanted to erase the trouble he'd seen in her eyes on the beach. He wanted to shield her from the trouble to come, as it surely would. Trouble, he thought, that seemed to cling to him like skin. At least here, here and now, there was only heat and pleasure and need. Here and now, he could give her all he had. She held on to him, even when he turned her around to slide his hands over her. She hooked an arm back around his neck to keep him close, and lifting her face as she might to the rain, opened. Her body yearned toward more. Touch here, taste there, and patient, relentless. He stoked the yearning to a deep, glorious ache. When she turned, mouth to mouth again, he braced her against the wet tiles and filled her. Slow now, slow, rising like the steam, falling like the water, floating on thick, wet clouds of pleasure. She looked through the mists into his eyes. There were the answers, she thought. She had only to accept what she already knew, only to hold what her heart already wanted.
You,
she thought as she let herself go.
I've been waiting for you.
When she pressed her face to his shoulder, shuddering with him on that final fall, she carried love. Lost in her, he held her another moment, just held. Then he tipped her face back, touched his lips to hers.
How about that sand?
Her laugh made the moment perfect. In the kitchen, warm and dry, she plotted out dinner while he poured wine.
We could just throw a sandwich together, he began.
I don't think so.
Are you trying to guilt me again because I missed lunch?
No, I think I notched that belt.
She set garlic, some plum tomatoes, a chunk of Parmesan on the counter.
I'm hungry, and you should be. Thanks.
She took the wine, tapped her glass to his.
But since you brought it up, you should tell me what you were so caught up in.
I met with the investigator today.
You said she was coming.
Intrigued, Abra turned from her hunt in the refrigerator.
You said before she had something new.
You could say that. When a thought struck, he held up a finger.
Wait, I want to try something. It'll just take a couple minutes.
He went to the library for the files, slipped out the photograph of Justin Susskind. Taking it up to his office, he made a copy. He closed his eyes, tried to see the police artist's sketch in his mind. With a pencil, he tried adding longer hair, shadowing the eyes. He couldn't claim to be Rembrandt, he thought, or even Hester H. Landon, but it was worth a shot. He took the photo and copy back downstairs, detoured back to the library for the files and his notes. When he got back to the kitchen, she had two pots on the stove. A narrow tray of olives, marinated artichokes, cherry peppers, sat on the island while she minced garlic.
How do you do that?
He wondered and popped an olive into his mouth.
Kitchen magic? What's all that?
Files the investigator left. Notes I've made. She went back to the beginning.
By the time he'd wound through it, pausing before telling her of Susskind's presence in Whiskey Beach, she'd tossed a bowl of campanelle, mixed with tomatoes, basil, and garlic. He watched her grate Parmesan over it.
You did that in like a half hour.
Yeah, kitchen magic, he said, before she could reply. He dug into the pasta, filled her bowl, then his. Sliding onto the stool beside his, Abra sampled the dish.
Nice. It worked. So, she thinks it's all connected too?
Yeah, she...
Nice?
He said after his own sample.
It's great! You should write this down.
And spoil the spontaneity? She'll talk to Vinny, right? And Detective Corbett?
That's the plan. And she'll have a couple of fresh items to pass along.
Such as?
Let's try this first. He turned over the doctored copy, set it on the counter between them. Does this guy look familiar?
He looks like the man in the bar that night. A lot like the man in the bar.
She lifted the photo, studied it carefully.
It looks more like him than I was able to translate to the police artist. Where did you get this?
In answer, Eli turned over the original photo.
Who is this?
She asked.
Shorter hair and a cleaner, smoother look about him. How did she find the man I saw in the bar?
She didn't know she found him. This is Justin Susskind.
Susskind? The man Lindsay was involved with? Of course!
Annoyance flicked over her face as she tapped her fingers to her temple.
Damn it! I saw his picture in the paper last year, but I didn't remember or put it together. Didn't pay that much attention, I guess. What was he doing at the pub?
Staking things out. A few months ago, he bought Sandcastle, a cottage on the North Point.
He bought a house in Whiskey Beach? I know that house!
She jabbed a finger at Eli.
I know it! I do seasonal cleaning for one across from it. Eli, there's only one reason he would buy a house here.
To gain access to this one.
But it's crazy. It's crazy when you think about it. He was having an affair with your wife, and now he's... Did he have the affair so he could get information about the house? Maybe hope to get more on the treasure? Or did he learn about all that during the affair?
Lindsay never had much interest in Bluff House.
But she was a connection,
Abra insisted.
She knew about the Calypso, the dowry, didn't she?
Sure, I told her about it the first time I brought her here. I showed her the cove where pirates used to moor, and about running whiskey during Prohibition. You know, impress the girl with local color and land and lore.
And was she impressed?
It's a good story. I remember her asking me to tell it at a couple of dinner parties back then, but that was more for laughs. She didn't think much of or about Whiskey Beach.
Susskind obviously did, and does. Eli, this is huge. He could be responsible for all of it. The break-ins, Hester's fall, Duncan's murder, Lindsay's...
He has an alibi for Lindsay.
But wasn't that his wife? If she lied...
They're separated, and she's sticking by her original statement. A little reluctantly, Sherilyn thinks, as she's not feeling very friendly toward Susskind these days.
She could still be lying.
Abra stabs some pasta.
He's guilty of other crimes.
Innocent until... Eli reminded her.
Oh, don't go lawyer on me. Give me one good reason other than bad behavior he'd buy that house.
I can give you a few. He likes the beach. He wanted an investment. His marriage was going south, and he wanted a place to go, somewhere quiet so he could think it all through. He and Lindsay drove up here on a whim so she could show him Bluff House, so he bought the cottage here to remind him of that perfect day.
Oh, that's all bullshit.
He shrugged a shoulder at the spike of annoyance. Reasonable doubt. If I were representing him, I'd make a big deal over my client being questioned for simply buying a beach house.
And if I were a prosecutor, I'd make a big deal over the series of coincidences and connections. A house on this particular beach, where your family owns a landmark home, and which has since his purchase experienced a series of break-ins.
She snorted, then fixed her face into serious lines.
Your Honor. I submit the defendant purchased said property and took residence in same for the sole purpose of illegally entering Bluff House to search for pirate treasure.
He smiled at her, leaned over to kiss her. Objection. Speculative.
I don't think I'd have liked Lawyer Landon.
Maybe not. But with what's here, I'd have gotten Susskind off in a walk.
Then flip it. How would Lawyer Landon build the case against?
By finding out he has knowledge of or interest in Esmeralda's dowry, for one. Linking those fibers found at your place to him, that would be key. Tracing the gun to him. Tracing any of the tools in the basement to him, for that matter. If my grandmother could identify him as the intruder, and all the way back to breaking his wife's statement. Better yet, find a way to put him in the house when Lindsay was killed, and that's not going to happen. Dig up a witness or witnesses who would testify to some trouble between him and Lindsay. That would be a start. Abra sipped her wine and considered.
I bet we'd find books and notes and all sorts of information on Bluff House and the dowry in his possession.
Not without a search warrant. You don't get those without probable cause.
Don't interrupt with legalities.
Abra dismissed them with a wave of her hand.
And they could do a CSI on the fibers in his clothes, the DNA from my pajamas.
All requiring a warrant, which requires probable cause.
And the gun?
Unregistered. That tells me he probably bought it on the street for cash, or from a shaky dealer for cash. Not that hard to do in Boston.
How do you trace something like that?
Show his picture around to known dealers in that kind of trade. Find the dealer, then get him to ID Susskind, then get him to agree to testify. Eli wove through the process and possibilities. All of that takes the same kind of luck it does to win the Mega Millions lottery.
Somebody has to win, eventually. Your investigator should do that, all of that. I think we need to let Hester remember on her own, if and when. And honestly, the fact that it was dark, I don't think she really saw him. Just more a shadow, a shape.
I'm with you there.
The tools wouldn't be easy. He probably bought them months ago. Who remembers some guy buying a pickaxe or sledgehammer? But... I think you should go to Boston and talk to his wife.
What, Eden Susskind? Why would she talk to me?
Well, hell, Eli, that shows what you know about women, especially angry, betrayed, or sad women. You were both cheated on. Her husband, your wife. That's a kind of bond. You shared a difficult experience.
It's a pretty shaky bond if she thinks I killed Lindsay.
There's only one way to find out. And while we're there, we could check out Kirby Duncan's office.
We?
Of course I'm going with you, a sympathetic female.
Laying her hand on her heart, Abra shifted her expression into quiet sympathy.
That's good. You're good at that.
Well, I do feel sympathetic. She might feel safer if there's another woman. One who feels and can show that sympathy and understanding. And we definitely need to show Susskind's picture around Duncan's offices.
That's what investigators are for.
Sure, yeah, but aren't you curious? I can't do it this week. I'm already booked. Plus, we should plan it a little more. I can probably juggle time next week. In the meantime, maybe your investigator will win the lottery and we can keep an eye out for Susskind and an eye on Sandcastle.
We can't go lurking down there. If he spots us, we could scare him off. And you're not going near his place. Non-negotiable, he said before she could respond. That's a line. Not in sand, in solid rock. We can't be sure he doesn't have another gun, but we can be reasonably sure if he does, he'd use it. Duncan had one registered, and it wasn't found on his body, or as far as I can find out anywhere else.
Speculative, but I mostly agree. We don't have to lurk. Come with me. I'll show you.
She led the way to the terrace and the telescope.
According to Mike, the previous owners bought it as an investment property about 5 years ago, right before the bubble burst. The economy bottomed out. People weren't spending as much on vacations and so on.
She continued as she turned the telescope south.
It was on the market for over a year, and they had to keep cutting the price. Then...
She straightened up from her focus.
Oh, for Christ's sake! I'm an idiot! You need to talk to Mike. He brokered the property!
You're kidding.
No, I wasn't thinking. He was the agent on that property. He might know something about something.
I'll talk to him.
For now, you can look.
She tapped the scope.
Sandcastle.
Eli bent over, looked through the eyepiece. It stood near the north point, two-story clapboard, with a wide deck facing the beach. Windows and sliders shuttered with blinds, he noted. A short driveway and no car.
Looks like nobody's home.
So, it would be a perfect time to go down. Take a closer look.
No, he said, still studying the house.
You know you want to.
Damn right he did, but he didn't want her with him. The only thing to see is a house, with the blinds closed.
I bet we could pick the lock.
Now he did straighten. Are you serious? She shrugged, had the grace to look sheepish.
Yes, I sort of am. We might find some evidence that...
Would be completely inadmissible.
Lawyer.
Sane, he insisted. We're not breaking into his or anyone's house. We're especially not breaking into the house of a man who may very well be a murderer.
You'd do it if I weren't here.
No, I wouldn't. At least he hoped to Christ he wouldn't. She narrowed her eyes at his face, then sighed.
You wouldn't. At least tell me you'd like to.
What I'd like is for him to be in there. I'd like to go down, kick in the door, then beat the living crap out of him. The cold rage in his voice got through, had her eyes widening.
Oh. Have you ever beaten the living crap out of anyone before?
No. He'd be my first. I'd enjoy it. Oh, fuck speculative. He rammed his hands into his pockets as he paced the terrace. Just fuck it. I don't know if he killed Lindsay, but odds are. And I know he's responsible for what happened to Gran. I know he put his hands on you. He put a bullet in Duncan. He'll do it all again and more to get what he's after. And I can't do a goddamn thing about it.
Yet.
He stopped, tried to shrug off some of the frustration.
Yet. What can you do at this point?
I can talk to Mike. I can think about talking to Eden Susskind, and the best way to approach her if I do. We can give the cops your ID of Justin Susskind, which gives them a reason to have a conversation with him. In a few days, to give Sherilyn some time first. Not much is likely to come from that, but it should worry him when it happens. I can keep researching the dowry and try to figure out why he thinks he'll find it here. As he thought it through, he calmed. I can trust the investigator to do her job. And as insurance, I can put together a plan to lure Susskind into the house so I can catch his sorry ass.
We,
she corrected. We can see his place. Therefore, he can sure as hell see Bluffhouse.
So he's watching it, at least off and on. We'd have to make sure he was in there. Then we could make a show of leaving the house, maybe even take a couple of overnight bags.
Like we're taking a quick trip.
It would give him the perfect opening. Just park out of sight, circle back on foot, and go in the south side, and into the passageway with a video camera. I've been looking at some online, and nanny cams.
Excellent. Proactive. And it could work. What about Barbie?
Crap. Yeah, he might not come in with her barking. We take her with us. Leave her with Mike. Would they keep her for a few hours?
Absolutely.
We'd need to refine it. And he'd want to walk it off, judge the timing. It's a good backup. Hopefully, between Sherilyn and the cops, they'll put together enough to pull him in and pressure him.
I like the idea of huddling in a secret passage with my lover.
She wrapped her arms around him.
Preparing to ambush a cold-blooded killer? Ooh, it's like a scene from a romantic thriller.
Just don't sneeze.
As if. And, speaking of scenes from a book...
Yeah, deal's a deal. I'll pick one. Let me think about it.
Fair enough. Now, about that tie...
You're serious about that?
Deadly. You can go pick one while I run those wet clothes I completely forgot about through the wash. Then I can look at those files while you do the dishes. Barbie will need her bedtime walk by then.
You've got it all figured out.
I do try.
She kissed him, one cheek, then the other.
One tie.
She repeated, and tugged him back inside. More reluctant than he'd expected, he went upstairs, pulled his tie rack out of the closet.
He liked his ties.
It wasn't as if he had an emotional attachment, but he liked having a variety.
Choices.
Which still didn't explain why he'd brought them all to the beach, especially when he'd worn a tie a spare handful of times in the last 6 months. Okay, maybe a slight emotional attachment. He'd won court cases in these ties, and lost a few. He'd selected one every day of his working life. He'd loosened them during late nights at the office, knotted and unknotted them countless times. In another life, he admitted. He reached for one, blue and gray stripes, changed his mind, lifted a maroon with a muted paisley pattern, changed it yet again. Oh, hell. He shut his eyes, reached down, and grabbed one blind.
It just had to be a freaking Hermes.
Done. It actually hurt to carry it away from the others. To offset the downer, he swung into his office. She'd tell him it was good, he thought, as he tried to decide what scene to give her. She'd lie. He didn't want her to lie. He wanted it to be good. Oddly, he realized that he knew just the scene for her to read, one where he could use her feedback. He scrolled through his manuscript, found the pages. Before he could change his mind, he printed them out.
Don't be a pussy,
he ordered himself, and took them and the tie downstairs. She sat at the counter, one bare foot rubbing the flank of the dog that sprawled on the floor, and wore glasses with bold orange frames.
You wear glasses?
She pulled them off like a dirty little secret.
Sometimes. For reading. Especially when the print's small. Some of this is really small.
Put them back on.
I'm vain. I can't help it.
He set the pages aside, took the glasses, slid them back on her nose.
You look cute.
I thought going for punchy frames would make a difference, but I'm still vain and still hate wearing them. Just for reading sometimes, and sometimes when I'm making jewelry.
The things you learn. Really cute.
She rolled her eyes behind the lenses, then took the glasses off again when she spotted the tie.
Nice!
She said, taking it from him, then wiggled her eyebrows when she saw the label.
Hermes? Very nice. The ladies at the consignment shop are going to be very pleased.
Consignment shop?
I can't just toss it. Somebody can use it.
He looked at it as she hopped up to tuck it into her bag. Can I buy it back? With a laugh, she shook her head.
You won't miss it. Is that for me?
She gestured toward the printout. Yeah, one scene. It's just a couple of pages. I figured I'd get it all over with at once, like ripping off a bandage.
It's not going to hurt.
It already does. I don't want you to lie to me.
Why would I lie to you?
He snatched up the pages as she reached for them. You're a born nurturer, and you're sleeping with me. It goes against the grain for you to hurt anyone's feelings. You won't hurt my feelings, and that's a lie. But I need to know if it works, or if it doesn't, even if it hurts.
I won't lie to you.
She wiggled her fingers for the pages.
Take your mind off what I'm doing, and load the dishwasher.
She propped her feet on the second stool, and since they were right there, put on her glasses. After peering at him over the pages, giving him a shooing gesture, she picked up the half glass of wine she'd been nursing and read. She read it twice, saying nothing as dishes rattled and water ran in the sink. Then she set the pages aside, took off her glasses so he could see her eyes clearly. She smiled.
I would have lied a little. The kind of thing I consider a soft lie, because it's like a cushion. It gives a soft landing to both parties.
A soft lie.
Yeah, I can usually manage those guilt-free. But I'm really glad I don't have to lie, even with the soft one. You gave me a love scene.
Well, yeah, there was a reason. I haven't written many of them. Could be a weak spot.
It's not. It's sexy and it's romantic. And more, you showed me what they're feeling.
She laid a hand on her heart.
I know he's bruised, here again.
She said, tapping her hand.
She wants to reach him, and she so much wants him to reach her. I don't know all the reasons, but I know this moment mattered to both of them. It's not a weak spot.
He didn't expect to find her. I didn't expect him to find her. She makes a difference in him, in the book.
Will he make a difference in her?
I hope so.
He's not you.
I don't want him to be, but there are pieces. She's not you, but I'm pretty sure she's going to wear orange-framed reading glasses. She laughed.
My gift, your literary oeuvre. I can't wait to read it, Eli, from start to finish.
It'll be a little while yet. I couldn't have written that scene 3 months ago. I wouldn't have believed it, and I couldn't have felt it. He walked to her. You've given me more than reading glasses. She slid her arm around him, rested her cheek on his chest. Hardly a wonder, she thought, once she'd taken that first risky step, the fall had followed so fast, and she wouldn't regret it.
Let's walk Barbie,
she said. At the words walk and Barbie, the dog scrambled up and went into full body wag.
And I can tell you a couple of ideas I had for your new third floor office.
For my office. Her lips curved as she drew back.
Just ideas, including,
she continued as she rose for the leash and one of his jackets, as hers was currently in spin dry.
A really wonderful painting at a shop in the village. One of Hester's, actually.
Don't we have enough paintings in the house?
Not in your new office.
She rolled up the sleeves of his jacket, zipped it.
Plus, your art in there should be inspiring, stimulating, and personal.
I know just what would inspire and stimulate and qualify as personal. He reached for another jacket. A full-length photo of you wearing just those glasses.
Really?
Life-size, he said as he hooked Barbie's leash.
That's a definite possibility.
What? His head came up fast, but she was already walking out the door. Wait, seriously? Her laugh trailed back as he and the dog chased after her. 25. Eli exchanged emails with his investigator, devoted an hour a day to researching Esmeralda's dowry, and dived into his book. He put Abra off on the trip to Boston as the book was running hot for him. He craved those hours inside it, and the possibility, tantalizingly close now, of truly redefining his life. He also wanted time to prepare. If he seriously meant to meet Eden Susskind, to try to talk to her about very sensitive areas of their personal lives, he needed to do it right. Not so different, to his mind, from questioning a witness at trial. And he wouldn't mind another day or two testing out the video camera and nanny cam he'd bought. In any case, he found himself reluctant to leave Whiskey Beach, even for a day. Periodically, he wandered out to the terrace, took a look through the telescope. Sherilyn's brief daily reports told him Justin Susskind remained in Boston, going about his business, living in an apartment near his offices. He'd visited his home once, but only long enough to pick up his two children to take them to dinner. Still, he could return any time. Eli didn't want to miss him. He tended to walk the dog north on the beach in the afternoon, and twice did his run with Barbie past Sandcastle, climbing up the North Beach steps to return by the road route. It gave him a closer look, a casual study of the doors, the windows. The blinds on Sandcastle remained firmly shut. He told himself he'd take a few more days, let everything settle, let it all simmer in his head. And if part of the simmering, the settling, led to the remote possibility he'd run into Susskind on one of his walks, have the satisfaction of confronting him face to face, Eli felt he'd earned it. When he knocked off for the day, he let himself think of Abra. He went downstairs, put Barbie out on the terrace as they'd both learned she'd stay and enjoy a little sunshine before their walk. Then he checked Abra's daily schedule. 5 o'clock class, he noted. Maybe he'd cook something. On second thought, a much safer, more palatable thought, he'd get pizza delivered. They could eat outside in the dusky spring evening with the pansies and daffodils. He'd stick a couple of candles out there. She liked candles. He'd turn on the strings of glass balls he'd found in his search and rummage through storage, and managed to repair and hung on the eaves over the main terrace. Maybe he'd steal some of the flowers around the house and put them on the table. She'd appreciate that. He'd have time to walk the dog, put in an hour or so in the library, even set a nice outdoor table before she got home. Got home, he thought. Technically, Laughing Gull was her home, but for all intents and purposes, she lived in Bluff House with him. And how did he feel about that? Comfortable, he realized. He felt comfortable about that. If anyone had asked him a few months before how he'd feel about being in any sort of relationship, he wouldn't have had an answer. The question wouldn't have processed. There just hadn't been enough of him to form any part of any relationship. He opened the refrigerator, thinking Mountain Dew or possibly Gatorade, and saw the bottle of water with its sticky note, one he'd ignored that morning.
Be good to yourself. Drink me first.
Okay. He took out the water, peeled off the sticky note. It made him smile. Did he say comfortable? True enough, he decided, but more than comfortable. For the first time in a very long time, he was happy. No, there hadn't been much of him at the start of things, but there'd been plenty of her. She filled the spaces. Now she made him want to do the same, even if it was only fumbling through a repair of a string of lights and hanging them because they'd made him think of her. Coming along, he murmured. He'd walk the dog, drink the water, then shift to research mode. At the knock on the door, he detoured to the front of the house. Hey, Mike! He stepped back. More progress, he thought. It pleased him to have a friend drop by.
Eli, sorry I didn't get back to you earlier. We've been slammed. Housing picking up, and rentals too. The spring season's rocking it.
That's good news. Still, he frowned.
What?
The tie.
Oh, yeah. Pretty cool, huh? I got it at the consignment shop. Hermes,
he added with a Tony accent.
$45, but it's good for impressing clients.
Yeah. Eli had thought the same once. Yeah.
I bet. So, I looked through my files on Sandcastle, refreshed my memory, you know? I can give you what's public record and some impressions. Some stuff, you know, falls into confidential.
Got it. You want a drink?
Could use something cold. It's been a long one.
Let's see what we got. Eli led the way back to the kitchen. Did you get the impression Susskind wanted it for a residence or an investment property?
Investment. The purchase was through his company, and there was some talk about company use. There wasn't a lot of talk,
Mike added as they reached the kitchen.
Most of the deal was long distance, email, phone.
Mm-hmm. We've got beer, juice, Gatorade, water, Mountain Dew, and Diet Pepsi.
Mountain Dew? I haven't had that since I was in college.
Super juice. You want one?
Why not?
Let's take this outside. Keep Barbie company. Mike spent a moment giving the delighted dog a rub before sitting down, stretching his legs out.
Now, this is what I'm talking about. Ah, the flowers look good, man.
Credit Abra. I'm on watering detail, though, so that counts. He liked doing it, liked watching the colors and shapes she'd crowded into pots grow, the shrubs along the edges of the stone flower. Occasionally he considered working out here, but realized he'd never get anything done. He'd just sit, as he was now, listening to the wind chimes play their tune, along with the whoosh of the sea, while he looked out at the water with his dog sitting beside him.
Have you seen any scantily clad yet through that thing?
Eli glanced at the telescope. Oh, one or two.
I should get me one.
Sad to say I spent more time looking north. I've got a good view of Sandcastle from here.
I was down that way today. It looks closed up.
Yeah, he hasn't been there for a while.
Damn shame to see it sit empty. I could rent it in a heartbeat. By the week, a long weekend.
Interested, Eli shifted. I bet you could. Maybe you should give him a call, see if he's interested. After another swing of dew, Mike nodded.
I can do that. You really think this guy's been breaking in here, that he killed that P.I.?
I've been going at it from every angle, circling around. That's where I keep coming back.
And he'd be the one who hurt Mrs. Landon.
I can't prove it, but yeah. If the rest fits, that fits.
Son of a fucker.
Mike muttered and opened his briefcase.
I've got his cell number in the file. Let's see what he has to say.
After opening the file, Mike punched the number into his phone.
Hey, hi there, Justin. It's Mike O'Malley, O'Malley and Dodd Properties up in Whiskey Beach. How you doing today?
Eli sat back, listened to Mike do his chatty salesman patter. And he thought the man he believed was responsible for death, for pain, for fear, was speaking on the other end. The man who'd taken lives and broken his own to bits. And he couldn't reach him. Not yet. Couldn't touch him. Couldn't stop him. But he would.
You've got my number if you change your mind. And if there's anything I can do for you down here, you just give me a call. Now, we're having some beautiful weather this spring, and it promises to be a terrific summer. You ought to come up. Take advantage of us. Oh, I know how that goes. All right, then. Bye.
Mike clicked off the phone.
Just as stiff and unfriendly as I remember. They're not interested in renting the property at this time. Some noise about possible company or family use coming up. He's a busy man.
How'd he find the property?
The internet? Bless it. He hit our webpage. He had three places earmarked to start. One's a block back, so you lose the ocean front. But it's a nice quiet street and an easy walk to the beach. The other's just south, closer to our place. But the owners decided to pull it off the market, let it ride for another season. Good move, because we booked it solid this summer.
Mike took a long pull of Mountain Dew.
Man, this takes me back. Anyway, we made an appointment. He wanted either me or Tony Dodd, my associate, to show the properties. He insisted it had to be one of us. I got a note right here in the file because I got attitude right off the get-go from him. No problem. A sale's a sale.
He doesn't have time to waste on underlings. He's too important. I get him.
Yeah. He made that clear,
Mike agreed.
So he comes in later that week, expensive suit, $200 haircut. He's got that entitled prep school superiority all over him. No offense, you probably went to one.
I did, and none taken. I know the type.
Okay. He doesn't want coffee or small talk. He's on a schedule. But when I'm driving him down to look at the two properties, he asks about Bluff House. Everybody does, so I didn't think anything of it. I remember we had one of those smoky skies that day, cold, gloomy, and the house looked like something right out of a movie. Some old gothic film, you know, the way it sits up here. I give him the spiel, the history, the pirate deal, because it always grabs the client's interest. And Christ, Eli, I hope to God I didn't say anything to bring this on.
He already knew. He was here because he knew.
I didn't like him, but I didn't jump to homicidal maniac or anything. Just tight-ass rich brick. I showed him the place a block back first. Sandcastle's newer, bigger, and a bigger commission. Plus, I tagged him as going for the bigger. But I took him through the other. He asked what most people ask, did the wandering through and out on the top deck. You can see the ocean from the deck.
and Bluffhouse.
Yeah. He wasn't too happy about the proximity of the other houses. Wanted to know which ones had permanent residence, which were rentals. But that's not an unusual question. I took him down to Sandcastle. It's got some nice features, and the other house is on as close in. He spent a lot of time out.